What does it mean to be an artist? To stare at a blank canvas, a block of clay, a white sheet of paper, and create. To create is to echo the supreme creative action of God the Father. In this way, the artist has a unique relationship with God and a responsibility to foster and grow in the gifts that they have been blessed with. An artist, therefore, is someone that humbly seeks truth in the silent work of their craft, patiently awaiting a glimpse of God amidst their creation. Today's guest is Michaela Barta, a dancer, teacher, young adult leader, and a missionary of beauty. She comes in to discuss St. John Paul II's letter to artists, its continued relevance, its ambition and call to action, and the subtle nuances of its poetic prose. What is sacred art? How should the church express itself? What does artistic ability demand of us? Welcome to the Beauty Ever New podcast.
Welcome to the Beauty Ever New podcast. We have a special guest today. Introduce yourself for all the listeners.
Hello, my name is Michaela Barta. Should I say anything else?
Yeah, what else do you want people to know about you?
I think I want them to know that I thought about saying my job first, but because we're talking about beauty and, like, you know, I don't know.
Tell the good people your job. Maybe. What do you do?
Oh, well, I was going to say, okay, like, I love to dance, but my job. Okay, I do young adult ministry at St. Lawrence in Sugar Land. Yes, I do that about 30 hours a week, and give or take. And then I teach dance at an all-girls high school downtown, Incarnate Word Academy. Teach dance there.
So you're a dancer.
So I'm a dancer. Yeah, awesome. Classically trained ballerina.
Nice.
But love, it's funny actually thinking about this. I love modern dance, and I could share more about that, like why. And I love contemporary. Favorite kind of dance, if we had to say, is a tie between ballet and salsa dancing. Okay. I love Latin dancing. And now I do a lot of contemporary and then a combination of, like, ballet and modern. So,
personal curiosity, when you talk about modern dancing,
yes,
is that, two questions. First of all, how closely is that tied to music that you're dancing to? And second part of that is, how much of that is the actual movements that you're...
So, modern dance originated in the, I want to say, the beginning of the 20th century. So literally with
modernism. Okay.
By a guy named Le Corbusier.
Machine for living, a machine for dancing.
So
you can dance if you want to.
Yeah, we can do modern dance right now if you want. Like, you know, it's just beats and...
So it started with the advent of MTV.
Oh, gosh.
Go on.
So modern dance is kind of a breaking away from classical dance.
Like every other
modern, right? It's a breaking away. But what's very interesting about it is there's a lot of, whereas ballet is very, shall we say, like up, right? Like you're always trying to be, like, lifted higher. Modernism is very grounded and rooted, like, literally, if we're talking anatomical terms, like, your pelvis is supposed to be, like, dropped, and your weight is very into the ground. And I've found actually a lot of, like, really cool moments of just, like, contemplation, because with modern dance, you have to practice letting go of control constantly, because you're doing fall and recovery, where you're letting your weight transfer, or you're literally letting your weight go, and you have to practice, and, like, you have to hone the skill of falling and recovering your weight, whereas ballet is very controlled. So there's this concept of, like, bound flow with ballet, and then the opposite of that, like, very, very, very much like an experience of a different type of freedom with modern dance. So then when we start, if we start talking about, like, spiritual terms and our spiritual life, it's really interesting doing modern versus ballet. Because you have to let go of control with modern.
Does the modern dance have, in modern architecture, there are things that are jettisoned that are harmful to the use of a church as a church. In modern dance, do you see whatever modernism changes, adds, or modifies as being in some way counterproductive or destructive
to the human body, maybe, or to
anything. Yeah.
Whew.
Because I think there are lots of modern buildings that are great. Like, there are some modern schools that are awesome, and I think modernism as an ethic for designing, for a lot of institutions makes sense. Mm. But for churches, one of the key tenets of early modernism is to jettison the past. And that's like saying everything that God told us, we're like, you know, forget that. Mm. And that just doesn't fly. But
and I would say, sadly, I think there is a bit of a flavor of that in modern dance too. It's a pushing away of all of the past and the classical, especially ballet. I mean, primarily ballet.
Is that a bad thing?
Bad.
There is an ontology to a building, right?
Yes.
A church tells you something. It's a pedagogical thing.
Yeah.
And it means something and it forms you. Mm-hmm. Does ballet do the same thing? And if you do a modern type of dance, is it harmful to the person by what it's, is it communicating in the same way that a building does ballet?
I think that you are going to have a lot of limitations in modern dance of trying to communicate a sense of like moving people into the word ethereal comes to mind. You cannot really portray something ethereal in the same way with modern dance that you could with ballet, because ballet is always trying to be weightless, effortless, lifting up. And actually, a really good friend of mine, her name is Caroline Bernard, she always says that when she watches ballet, particularly ballet, it always makes her want to be a better person. Like, that's just what she says. Mm. When she watches ballet, it makes her want to be a better person. Modern dance, here's the thought that comes to mind, is for the dancer, it can be a very spiritual experience, also for the audience member. But I wonder, I think it's just a lot harder to communicate certain things about spiritual realities or just moving people up.
Yeah, it's like ballet, classical ballet sounds like it's the equivalent of trying to communicate architecturally the glorified state.
Yes.
And everything is, you know, if you have a church with a big glass wall behind the altar, people say, oh, look, that's nature. But that's fallen nature. It's not glorified nature. It's not the perfect. It's not the purified thing. So it sounds like what you're describing is that ballet in some way communicates the glorified state of like the person in an icon, not the physical, not the the fallen state of something.
Right. So. And we could say that there's a certain sense of humanness that is experienced in modernism, but I don't think we would say that that's bad.
Either. Yeah, yeah, yeah. So we can put this later if it doesn't fit into the
episode. That's fine. Yeah. In fact, John Paul II
like, so interesting.
Was kind of known for being a pope who tried to integrate the subjective as well as the objective.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because, you know, like in a lot of times in religion, you talk about, is this objectively good or evil?
Yeah.
Right? And the criticism pre-Vatican II was that a lot of times they didn't take the subjective into account. It was like, oh, you have all these life circumstances that make it hard for you to do this? Too bad. That's the way it is. Mm. Right?
Yeah.
Whereas kind of part of this of Vatican II was, let's look at the full human person and see how we can integrate the subjective and the objective.
Right.
And what I've heard about modern art is what it does really well is show the subjective.
Absolutely, which is necessary.
Which is necessary and important for us to fully understand where people are at.
Yep.
So if part of faith is to bring people and meet them where they're at, modernism and art, maybe it sounds like even in dance, could be an important avenue to listen to people and what they're thinking and what they're saying.
Mm-hmm. So.
Let's move in to Letter to Artists.
Let's move
this episode is on the document that Pope St. John Paul the
Great.
Yeah. I don't know how many. Some people add like four superlatives.
Yeah, they're
titles, like, oh, Captain, my Captain, Pope St. John Paul the Great.
Apostle of the human person.
Anyways, so it's on Letter to Artists, which is a document that the aforementioned pontiff wrote. And I'm going to ask you, after I ask you the first question, I'm going to ask you, who is the artist John Paul II is speaking to? Because it's a letter to artists.
Yes.
Who's the artist? But I'm going to preface that by saying, by mentioning the question that Rafa just called out, which is that pre-Vatican II, there was an insistence on focusing on objectivity and philosophical syllogisms of the church in a way that seemed kind of dry. But he, as an artist himself, as a poet.
He was a poet.
As a
playwright.
Yeah.
An actor, too.
Actor, mm-hmm. hiker, skier. He's like,
he was like the manly one. Yeah. Sports
enthusiast. I would drink a glass of bourbon with him, and he would drink it faster than I would.
He would do it.
I'm going to just pull a little more.
So there's a line in page 4 of the document that says that in shaping a masterpiece, the artist reveals his own personality by means of it. And he's explicitly saying here that in the act of making something, you are imbuing yourself, you're revealing your own personality.
Yes.
So how do you, as someone who teaches classes on this and has thought about it a lot,
yeah.
how do you balance the need for designing and you know operating out of a series of universal truths
mm.
and beauty being a universal with this artistic self-expression that in some way the modernist project took to an extreme to the detriment of the two things that are in tension. How do you think about these two things as they relate to one another?
Okay, well, that is not a lofty, deep, interior question at all.
That should take about 30 seconds to answer.
So 30 seconds. So the question is, how do we balance...
Time's up. Okay, next question. No, sorry.
Okay, did you have a preface? No, you had a follow-up question. But yeah, the
question to this, the document is called Letter to Artists.
Who is the artist?
And he speaks to... It's a very broad letter.
It is.
So I want... As you're answering the first question, think mm-hmm. who is the person he's speaking to.
Mm-hmm.
Artist he talks to, he says that like he's talking about them imbuing the reveal their own personality in what they make. So just talk about the revealing your own personality.
So revealing your own personality. I think there. So the first thing that comes to mind is the necessity of self-awareness, examination of conscience, the necessity of honesty, because. So it's the scripture, the truth will set you free, right? If I am being honest in my art, if I'm being honest in the choreography that I create, what does that mean? Then it's like, okay, Michaela, what do you even mean by that?
What do you mean by that?
Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah.
But maybe it could be easier to perhaps to think, because dance is a little bit more abstract, like a poem or something. Like, I have to be as much as I can, it's a process, right, of trying to reveal what's actually going on deep within, because whatever the truth is going to be of God. And the more that I actually come into contact with the honest truth going on in my heart and my soul, it is inadvertently, no matter what, it's going to reveal
totally
something of God. And so I would say the line, like the focus has to be in some ways, it's odd because we're talking about beauty, pursuing truth in a particular way, because that keeps us focused and keeps us grounded and rooted. And so that I'm expressing myself, but also in the sense I'm expressing who God is.
Totally makes sense. And he talks about elsewhere in the document that, if you read it and you haven't thought about it much, and that's probably me because I read it for the first time a couple of days ago.
Okay.
Meaning like last night.
Okay.
mea culpa.
Good. All right.
All the way through.
Mm-hmm.
He talks about the necessity of a personal prayer life and engage in that. And that I think what you said is spot on, that you're going to communicate something. It's kind of like you can't not play the game. You're going to communicate something by what you say.
Oh,
and whatever
yeah.
you do is a response to the questions being presented to you. The question is, how much are you preparing yourself and how much are you forming yourself and how much are you engaged in it? And you're going to give an answer at some point.
Yes.
I had this thought about someone posted something online asking about this graphic design question. They said, well, is this good? And how do you know it's good? And how you're evaluating whether or not it's a productive thing to do. And it hit me that what they were doing, everything that you create as a graphic designer and as an architect and as a dancer,
yes,
all of these things are responses.
Yes.
And what you have to do is you have to come to terms with the reality of you either knowing what the question is or not knowing what the question is.
Mm.
It's never just a like default, like, I need to design a t-shirt or something, or I need to design a building.
Yeah.
What question are you responding to? Because everything you create is a response.
Yes.
And the degree to which you're asking the right questions and that you're engaged with what the question is in the first place is the degree to which your answer, what you create, will resonate in some way. So what you're talking about, the like, need to be personally formed is
in
my mind, it's thinking about the question that's being asked.
Thinking about the question that's being asked.
Yeah.
Definitely. Definitely. And so the more that a person is self-aware, and because like JP2 says that man, like Jesus fully reveals man to himself, like it's only in Christ that man can be fully revealed to himself. And so, yes, the more that we step into a deep daily prayer life, the more that we can answer, ask the right questions and answer the question more honestly. And
totes.
Of course, there is a difference between honesty and truth in a sense, because I can tell the Lord, I feel really alone right now, even though I know it is true that you're with me, I feel really alone. But that's necessary to say. And that's sometimes that's necessary to communicate maybe through a dance, is this is still the reality of being human, is sometimes this is the way.
Yeah.
That this is still my reality, even though I know that there's a...
Totally. So. We'll post a link in the show notes to the Letter to Artists. It's a really short document. And if you go to the Vatican website and export as a PDF, it's about 12 pages. So you can read it in a sitting. It's pretty short. So I recommend everyone that's reading this, stop for a moment.
100%.
100%. And just go read it. There's a few sections. Each like chapter is less than a page long. That will help your...
Whether you identify as an artist or not.
Apprehension of this. And exactly, whether you identify as an artist or not, and part of why I'm asking you to go read the document, is the question I'm about to ask you, which is, who are the artists? It's called Letter to Artists.
Yeah.
And Raphael and I were talking before this, and he said, what's your favorite thing about the document? I said, that's a really good question. And I thought about it for a little bit, and my strategic mind... My like strength finder strategy thinks like, back up. Can you go any broader? Right.
Right.
Can you go up a level? Can you try to figure out where this fits into the system? And he has got to a point where you can't go any broader. And part of why I like it is it's the ambition is like super lofty. And I think in my mind, that's part of the weakness of it, is that it's so broad that I think as an architect, I told him, I said, what I want is I want a subset, like the Letter to Architects, which instantiates all of these universal truths as it relates particularly to the architect's condition in 2019, right? So who is the artist he's talking to, and how do you think about that?
So it's funny that you asked that. I hadn't even thought about that question. So the special, he has different things, right? The subtitles, the special vocation of the artist. I mean, I guess I have thought about it in the sense that it's very clear. He makes two separate distinctions. Not all are called, so this is at section two. Not all are called to be artists. So this is where he really defines it. In the specific sense of the term, yet as Genesis has it, all men, so this is where it gets super broad, and women are entrusted with the task of crafting their own life. In a certain sense, they are to make of it a work of art, a masterpiece. So you know how this is like a thing with Catholic creatives right now? Right, the Facebook group and this like movement that's growing is this idea, not even the idea, but it's just something that's been circulating because of that created book with likable art, where the first five words of the Bible.
Shout out Corey Hyman.
Yeah, shout out. In the beginning, God created, and so our first understanding, the first revelation of who God is, is as creator.
First five words.
So, with this in mind, it is like he's reminding people that we're all made in the image of a creative God, so we all have creative capacities. And so he's reminding people of that. Like in a broad sense, we all are creative.
The accountant.
Yeah.
Is creative.
The engineer.
The accountant. You're also in prison. Welcome to Catholic prison ministry in the Diocese of Houston. We have a big prison ministry in Houston. So you're part of the you're part of the beloved.
Oh gosh.
Prison ministry and the port ministry and the 10,000 beds in the med center.
Oh my.
Houston has a.
Oh my.
Yeah. Yeah. Monsignor Bill said in Mass, he's like, we are technically responsible for, there are 10,000 beds in the med center in Houston. And as parishes are defined by geography, that's part of St. Vincent de Paul's mission, but you can't obviously do that. So we like, I don't know, import priests, and we have the port, which has, you know, I don't know, like 250,000 people or some like crazy big number. That over the course of the Port of Houston, people come in and they can't leave the port So they have to stay there. So they have that priest that go and celebrate mass and confession and things for them. And we have, you know, we incarcerate like the entire
country,
state of Texas.
Oh, yes. Yeah. We do. We do.
So we have these three crazy, like idiosyncratic, like ministry opportunities, let's say, in the Archdiocese of Galveston, Houston.
We do. That and makes prisons it very, are so ugly.
Yeah. What if we designed amazing prisons?
No.
And then, yeah.
And they're already dehumanized, so how does that help them become more human? Worse.
Colby Ministries. I've been listening to people talk about that.
Who?
To Colby Ministry. It's some sort of prison ministry thing. Yeah. Maybe during Lent. Maybe I'll go.
Okay, do it.
Speak to the peeps.
How did we get on this?
Accountants.
Accountants.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Don't be a creative accountant. So, everyone but accountants.
You asked who is he speaking to. And when he's saying artists in the specific sense of the term, he's talking about those who have who are coming to this conclusion that they have a gift from God they're called to a vocation and a mission.
Yeah.
So it's going to be some creative capacity in a way that produces an artistic work. Mm-hmm. They're creating an artistic work. So he's talking about artists. And he, at one point, it's sad, he doesn't say dancers, but every time we read this with the girls, I always say like dancers too. I forget where it is, but he kind of lists a few different types of artists.
Mm. He mentions architects at one point.
He does. He mentions architects. He mentions musicians, painters. I don't remember where it is, but it's somewhere in here. We'll find it.
Oh, I highlighted it. I was like, hey, he said us. Chapter 12, the church needs art.
Okay.
Paragraph 4, the church needs architects because she needs spaces to bring the Christian people together to celebrate the mysteries of salvation.
Mm.
After terrible destruction of the last world war, and the growth of great cities, a new generation of architects show themselves adept at responding to the exigencies of Christian worship. Nice word, JP2. Confirming that the religious theme can still inspire architectural design in our own day. Can still inspire.
Yes.
Not infrequently, these architects have constructed churches which are both places of prayer and true works of art.
Yes. Excellent. And before, so we've got church needs architects because she needs spaces to bring the Christian people together. Mm. And then before that, the church also needs musicians. Before that, he talks about literary.
The church needs liturgical dancers because.
Right.
Was that it?
No.
Was that in there? No.
That was in that. Oh, yeah. That was the original draft.
And so he says, art must make perceptible and as far as possible attractive the world of the spirit of the invisible God. So he says, art has a unique capacity to take one or other facet of the message and translate it into colors, shapes, and sounds, which nourish the intuition of those who look or listen. So when we're talking about the artist, it's one who, in some capacity, puts colors together or shapes. We could talk about dancers or painters, too, right? Or rather, or architects.
There's this great line.
And sounds. But that's a good thing to look at if we're talking about what do we mean by artists. We're talking about fine art, visual art, performing art. Where does architecture fall under that?
Its own thing?
I think it's a fine art, but it's kind of
all it's now defined by the government as a STEM field, so we can receive funding from all of these fancy pants grants.
You'll take it. Yeah. You'll receive it.
I will receive.
Yes.
Asking shall receive. There's this nice line that answers your question about what beauty is. Or what the artist is, and it's the church needs art in section 12. Uh-huh. It must therefore translate into meaningful terms that which is in itself ineffable.
Yes.
Maybe beauty is an ineffable thing, and the act of trying to define it is in some way a translation. So you can't point to the thing because the thing isn't fundamentally descriptive by words.
Right.
So when you try to define it, you're removing it from what it is, and you're trying to have a shadow of what it is. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So you're making the ineffable something less ineffable and then makes it less, it's like God himself, right? There's an apophatic approach to God where we can only define what he isn't in a way.
Which is why, so ineffable, I always ask the girls, I stop them and I say, what does ineffable mean? And they're like, I don't know. And then they take all these guesses one of the dictionary terms is too extreme for words. Ooh, that's particularly what it's saying. Nice. And so I think it's cool that he's saying translate into colors, shapes, and sounds, things that we can perceive with our eyes, our ears, our senses. So.
So, we're talking about how to objectively say something is beautiful and not.
Yes.
Sometimes people draw distinctions and say there's a difference between sacred beauty and secular beauty. Right? So And the difference that people sometimes talk about is sacred beauty is revealing
something of God.
Something of God.
Yes.
Whereas secular beauty is maybe revealing something about your life.
Yeah.
And some people would say sacred beauty should not be expressive because all you're doing is revealing something outside of yourself. Mm. So in other words, the artist gets consumed into the act of creating sacred beauty. What do you think about that?
The artist gets consumed into the act.
So that the artist diminishes in a way. He gives up of himself to create the sacred art.
I think there's something to that. Because I guess in some ways we have to be careful because obviously we say human life is sacred, right? Human life is sacred. So we have to be careful when we start trying to make a distinction that human to express our own selves is secular and not sacred. There has to be that just comes to mind as being careful. But absolutely, if we're trying as with all of our own human flawed imperfect capacities and with the work of the Holy Spirit to create sacred art, then in some way you would say yes, of course we would have to be lost. We'd have to lose ourself. We would have to surrender and let the Lord create in us. So my friend Kate Capato is a, and you could have her on the podcast. Okay. She is a sacred oil painter. Wow. And she...
she's super good.
She's incredible.
Yeah, it's
pretty incredible. And she absolutely is not... And she could say this. She's a dancer too. Yeah, we did a piece together. Yeah. We created a piece. And so I would say, so here's what comes to mind too is... so she is, and all of her works are sacred art. So they're depicting Mary, Jesus, the Holy Family, other just, and also just depictions of God. So what she doesn't express herself.
Right.
She's revealing truth that she has found through her own prayer life, through scripture, through the inspiration of the Holy Spirit. She's not trying to reveal Kate. Yeah. She might be revealing something that Kate has learned and been taught by the Lord, but it's she's not revealing Kate, she's revealing God. So would not be expressive.
Right. So yeah. It's like John the Baptist, right?
Yeah.
I must decrease, so he may increase.
Yes.
So John Paul II talks about how there's this really special relationship that an artist has with God.
Yes.
And that is that you share in his creative act, you know, and that is something that is really special, something that lets you connect with God in a way that maybe a lot of people don't get to. Like, we talked about how the artist can be anyone, but I think artists in particular, because they are tasked with creating,
yes,
they have this special bond with God, whether they realize it or not.
Mm.
It's pretty common to hear artists, architects, talk about how when they finish a work, they feel like something was guiding their hand. Like, this is something I hear often from architects, that they look back at what they did and they don't even know how they got there. Mm. They just know that this beautiful thing emerged. And then it was as if a force was guiding their hand. And this is people that are not Catholic. You know, I'm thinking of particular of this architect named Louis Kahn, who was pretty much completely secular.
Wow.
He was, you know, culturally Jewish, but otherwise had no faith. And he would talk about how there was something guiding his hand as he's creating this art, you know, this architecture. And this is something that I hear artists talk about often. You know, some people call it the flow state. You know, you kind of get into this groove, you get into this area where something takes you over and you just create.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And then you can look back and sometimes wonder, like, how did I do this?
Right.
In fact, I was talking to our boss, and he was driving by one of the churches that we did, St. Martin's Episcopal Church in Houston. And he like says that to this day, you know, it's been years, he still looks at it and says, I can't believe we had something to do with that. But there's just like this, I don't know what to call it, this almost like alchemy that comes with the creation of beautiful art.
Mm.
That you don't even know how you got there. That just all these things converge to create beauty.
Mm.
So maybe talk a little bit about that special relationship that artists have with God as creators, and how sometimes God blesses us with this with this comfort of knowing that we're creating together.
Mm. That's beautiful. And I love that you, the way that you said that, you said this alchemy, this force, and that even so for any person of goodwill, right? Any person of goodwill who is, who is, because he's made in the image of God, whether he's Christian, Catholic, whatever, he can be guided by the Holy Spirit to create. And so thinking about what you're saying, the special relationship, I think, so there's a quote from section 6, the last paragraph. It says, every genuine art form is in its own way. In its own way is a path to the inmost reality of man and of the world. And it goes on to say it is therefore a wholly valid approach to the realm of faith, which gives human experience its ultimate meaning. And it says, that is why the gospel fullness of truth was bound from the beginning to stir the interest of artists who by their very nature are alert to every epiphany of the inner beauty of things. I think we find with artists that they're sometimes, that's why when artists get together, there is such a sense of camaraderie.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Because we see, I think it's earlier too, in the letter, where he talks about how artists find like that hidden meaning of things. We're captivated by the hidden power of sounds and words, and we get drawn in to the visible world, but then we sense the mystery, and we sense artists in some way are really drawn into the invisible reality, and so we have often a sense of solitude, and sometimes isolation, sometimes loneliness. I think especially for artists who struggle with faith, so secular artists. So if we're talking about artists who have a relationship with God in some capacity, they can find, absolutely. We talk about, so John Paul in Theology of Body talks about original solitude, original solitude of Adam. And so there's something different about experiencing creative works with God. There's something different about it. And again, it's harder to put into words, but we find when we have co-created with God, that bond is strengthened. And we look back on our work, like he says, a glimmer of that feeling has shone so often in your eyes when, like the artists of every age, captivated by the hidden power of sounds, you have admired the work of your inspiration, sensing in it some echo of the mystery of creation with which God, the sole creator of all things, has wished in some way to associate you. So what comes to mind about this special relationship is maybe in some ways we get to get drawn back to the beginning of creation.
Yeah.
And we get to sense that. We get to sense what it was like for God to create the world.
Right.
And we're drawn into that echo and that nostalgia that we often feel when we're just in the longing and nothing satisfies us and we know we're made for more. And that's hard. It's really hard because we know we're not made for here. But when we're creating, we get drawn back. I don't know. Maybe we get drawn back to the beginning.
Well, I totally missed that. That's a great end of the first paragraph. For those of you who didn't heed the warning the first time, go read the document.
That was the first paragraph of the entire document.
The end of the first paragraph. He talks about that you have admired the work of your what is it?
Of your own inspiration.
Of your own inspiration. And then he goes on to say that he has wished to associate in some way to you. It's like God delights in seeing you and seeing the things you create, and that you made that particular thing. It's not just that he made you and he finds you like wonderful because he made you, but that he made you. And then it's like when I see my 3-year-old kid and he colors something and it's actually kind of good. And I'm like, oh, honey, check this out. Like, he drew a tree and it looks like a tree. You know,
well,
like,
it's like he,
like, oh, he like pats on the head and we like make something we think is great. And he's like, oh, look, it actually kind of looks like the thing it's supposed to look like.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's like, and you associate it with him. And I love the tree because Leo drew a tree and he's like 3 and it looks like it. You know, he like watercolored and looks like a thing.
Yeah.
It's that I see in this me and my son and God delighting and like me delighting in this little thing. And I still have the tree. Like, sometimes the things are like, let's be honest, a lot of times artwork's not great.
Not that great.
And it's just like, chunk of honey. And this thing,
right.
Sometimes you save it. And this is God saying, you know what? Sometimes I'll save the things you do because they remind me of you and I love you.
Right. And yeah. God's first encounter with us was in his identity as who he is as creator. That was that's the beginning. And so there's a certain, I don't know, specialness. I don't know what another word to describe it to that. So
yeah. And I also think there's a glimpse of heaven in creating. There are certain things in life that I think show us what heaven will be like. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they're too few and far between. But mm-hmm. I feel like I'm just thinking of whenever, and unfortunately, this doesn't happen as much as I wish it could. But whenever I'm designing a building, whenever I'm designing a piece of a building, you get into a state in which you get so consumed by the work.
Yeah.
That time drops away.
Yeah.
And that the world drops away. And you're just consumed by the act of creating.
Yeah.
I feel like that's when you get a glimpse of heaven. Mm-hmm. If you extrapolate that to other life experiences, there have been times when I'm in a building or I'm in a place. And I know that I'm having an experience that I can have nowhere else. This is the only place where I can experience what I am experiencing now. And that too has a power that I think is unlike anything that is out there.
Where would that be? Where have you actually had that experience?
I'm thinking of, I don't know, Bryant Park in New York City. When you're sitting there underneath the canopy of these beautiful trees on a, let's say, a warm, sunny April day, watching people walk by. And of course, I'm on vacation, so I'm not too worried about stuff.
Yeah.
But you're just able to just watch people. Just watch how people are moving, watch how the shadows are moving on the ground, how the clouds are moving across the sky. And you're just like, this is what life is about. You know, like when you have those kinds of moments. And so I feel like maybe John Paul II is talking a little bit about that aspect of creation in which you get so consumed, that everything drops away. All you care about is almost like being a kid again and playing.
Yeah.
And that is what heaven is like. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's an experience of, like you said, being a kid. That's interesting that you said being a kid, like being like a child.
Yeah.
It's interesting. That association with heaven.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I wanted to kind of follow up on that. And he talks about, you have the special relationship, but he says, so it says the artist, and this is in section 3, about in the middle. And he says the artist has a special relationship to beauty. In a very true sense, it can be said that beauty is the vocation bestowed on him by the creator in the gift of artistic talent. So that it is not only like, so you have artistic talent.
Yep.
I may or may not use it. But that if you have artistic talent, it is actually part of your vocation. That it is kind of a call to give that as a gift to the world. Then later on he talks about, let's see if I can find it here. He kind of talks about it. He says, therefore, there is therefore an ethic, even a spirituality of artistic service, which contributes in its way to the life and renewal of a people. I found that very interesting because he almost suggests that there is a unique spirituality to creative endeavors, to people that are creative.
Yes.
That you could almost say that you could create a spirituality that is unique to an artist. And that artists could belong to, and that they could really develop this idea of vocation and this idea that you do have a very special relationship. I don't know if you've heard of or talked about that idea that you could have, let's say, a religious order of artists that have a special charism and spirituality, kind of stemming from what he's talking about, and all centered around the fact that there's a special vocation that they are called to, and that they have a special relationship to God through the fact that they create as artists.
Oh, for sure. Yes, absolutely. I think, so there is this idea that we've had of creating a missionary organization that is for missionaries of beauty. So you've got NET, you've got Focus, you've got Culture Project, you've got Life Teen Missionaries. Create a nonprofit for missionaries of beauty. Artists of different types, all under different directors, with maybe some overall directors, some staff. It travels. You create these events that are all catered around different kinds of beauty, maybe around a particular theme, whether it's the Eucharist, or if you're a more like disengaged Catholic, even moving into secular crowd, maybe it's just about hope versus despair. You've got poets, you've got musicians, you've got painters, you got dancers, and you create a retreat, maybe style kind of experience, but it's not just talks in small group. It's encounters with beauty that leads a person ultimately to, in a way of trying to lead them. Sometimes we would do adoration, sometimes not. So
cool. Now, is it to form the people, or is it so that?
So it's evangelistic in nature. So meaning it would form the missionaries, but in some sense, you would already want artists who are pursuing excellence, who have talent that is moving in the realm of excellence. So yeah. that way we could really.
Yeah, you want people really who are already kind of killing it, and then you want to. So is it a thing where you would take someone like Focus would form someone and they would go out, or you bring people in to form them and then they go and do whatever they want to do?
We would bring people in, form them, and then we would collaborate together and create, take our own talents and then create something as a group. And then that could travel. It could be parishes, it could be schools, it could be
Discovery Green where, like, in Houston. People do things together, or is it like, for instance,
it could be a festival.
The reason why I ask is like Focus is a people come in and then they kind of like, you know, spread out.
So
and
that
go.
Would be like, or way, is it a thing way where people long-term. Come together
and it's
and it travels
more of like there's a kind of vitality to having a concentration. So you're imagining the people staying together.
So we're imagining the people staying together, but also you could have different teams. So you could have a group of musicians, a group of dancers on one team, and then have different. Yeah, we haven't fleshed all that out yet, but the idea would be it would travel. We wouldn't just stay in like Houston or something. Yeah.
But the idea being that there would be a unique kind of spirituality.
But there would be a spirituality, and what we have said so far. So to answer your question, because you're asking about spirituality of artistic service, again, you're asking a great question, and I would have to really think about this some more, because I think if we're talking about a spirituality, we would have to incorporate a core value of vulnerability or of honesty, something about that, because we can't produce authentic art. I mean, you would have to talk about purity of heart, purity of intention. Because yes, so spirituality, we've talked about being centered in the Eucharist. If this missionary, this nonprofit, it would be Eucharistic centered, and we would all of our works would flow from encountering Jesus in the Eucharist.
Yeah, no, that's really interesting. In fact, I think you and I have talked about loosely this idea that, again, beauty
being
seems
dancers.
To be something.
We'll what? Be dancers. About being dancers.
About being dancers?
Oh, yeah, we've talked about that.
Being dancers.
Yeah, but then we tried it. And it
what kind of dance
work.
Would you
it,
do?
It didn't
yeah.
work.
What kind of dance
it
would you do? Work.
The good kind.
Modern, of course.
Modern.
Dances. Yeah, hip to the ground. Fall, and you have to recover a lot.
Hips. All that and stuff. Then if you're like hips, then there would be like some, I don't know, Shakira.
Yeah, hips don't lie.
I bring all the boys to the yard.
Yeah.
edit.
No, we're leaving this.
That's good.
Continue.
No,
go
so
on.
We've talked
good.
About this growing idea humility. That, again, people don't experience beauty as often as they should.
Right.
So true. In our, you know, In college, there was this professor who used to describe Houston as a problem-rich environment.
Houston is but that, so ugly problem-rich in so many ways.
But that
you
just
love
means,
it, don't
that
you?
Just
love
means,
it. I love Houston.
Houston
it
has
just
soul.
Means there is a lot of opportunity.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So we, you know, we talk about the much maligned suburban parish.
Mm.
We love you. We really do. And so the idea is, from an architecture perspective, what if we did something like, we will come into your parish and transform a closet, a small classroom, whatever you give us.
A
little bit, be a little more ambitious than that.
Whatever you give us.
Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Into just an experience of beauty.
Mm.
We just make a super beautiful, prayerful space that you can inhabit and that people can experience.
Yeah.
That, and this would be an opportunity that they would otherwise not get anywhere else.
Right.
You know, and yes, it would be an almost like an installation of beauty somewhere.
And we
would, you know, talk about it. We would maybe have workshops around it. But the idea being that you're going to introduce a physical place where people can come and experience beauty in these places that sometimes are beauty deserts.
Like a traveling adoration chapel or something.
Right.
Take a totally nondescript room.
Right.
Design something that fits into what would otherwise be very normative.
Mm.
It's easy to say words. It's like, it's exceptional in a normative space. So it's beautiful.
Yes.
Like, what does that mean?
Right.
But
that's, I love that. I love that. And then what comes to mind too, is then it's always like that meeting people. And this is why I love giving talks on beauty to at parishes. And I do that a little bit more, but trying to, there are so many Catholics who are more engaged, but don't quite understand beauty or understand beauty's, the idea of that beauty, to perceive beauty, to receive it, you have to be receptive. You have to be in the state of being, not doing. And they don't get that. because we have, I think, the architecture firm, Jackson and Ryan. I think you guys designed the Ave Maria Center at St. Lawrence. Mm-hmm. And we have the oratory. Mm-hmm. So it's like this room that's kind of like a chapel, but it doesn't have a tabernacle. And it's gorgeous. We have the dome. We've got the luminous mysteries. We've got this awesome mosaic of Jesus at the wedding of at Cana. But people are never in there. Mm-hmm. And the reason is because they don't, and even I'm talking about like me, like we forget that we need to be in there and be in that space. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And we think we don't need it. And that would be the follow-up, right? Of like how making the case continuously in parishes, yeah, for beauty. Like how do we remind people that you have to stop doing and you need to remove yourself and go to this place, go to this space. Right. Yeah.
But also, how do we make it so that it becomes part of what they do experience without having to go to this particular place?
Well, sure, that's the end goal.
That would be the end goal.
Yeah.
Well, so one thing that we kind of keep talking about over and over in the podcast is this idea, specifically related to Mass and the liturgy, that what our churches sometimes don't do is reveal what is happening in the Mass to us. That we're having to go to Mass and then kind of do some mental gymnastics and tell ourselves, okay, this is what's going on. Mm-hmm. When in reality, for a long, you know, for the long history of the church, the actual building helped to illustrate what was going on so that you the mental leap wasn't as big.
Right.
You kind of saw the building kind of pointed in the right direction and you were able to just kind of take it in. So that's kind of part of this whole idea, is that we could, with these strategic installations, begin to restore some of that beauty and some of that, you know, just
even some just of those
signposts, if you will.
Yes, because there's different steps and all steps are important.
Right.
So, yes. And
a lot of times baby steps baby is where steps. You have to go.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be nice to just tear everything down and do it over again. It would be nice.
But you're right. And like, and the installations of beauty, yeah, that's a great point. Starting with that. We should probably stop talking.
Yeah.
Well, thank you for coming on.
Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Letter to Artists. This will be episode 5, 6, and 7 in the season.
8, 9, and 10. No.
Oh, my gosh. All right.
Thanks for listening. The best way to enjoy the podcast is to pull up the accompanying blog post for the episode at beautyevernew.com. There you will find show notes, guest information, helpful visual aids, and more. To continue the conversation, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and let us know how you're experiencing beauty in your churches and communities.